You're tuned to WFHB
91.3
and 98.1 FM.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community.
And supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM, reporting live for WFHB. This is Carolyn Vanderweel.
And I'm Ryan Stacey. This is the Daily Local News for Thursday, October 6, 2016.
I like finding out the facts on things. How can you be a slave and then a year or so after slavery is over, you own property, you're doing well? How does that happen?
The women behind a new production called Resilience discuss the histories of people of color in Indiana. That's later in the show in another edition of Big Talk with Michael Glab. But first, these local headlines.
Developers of a proposed high-density student housing complex planned for Dunn Hill are facing tough criticism from area residents. In the October 5th meeting of the City Council, residents of the Garden Hill neighborhood complained of the noise, violence, and parking issues they experienced from the area's existing student housing. Carrie Slaw of the Garden Hill Neighborhood Association said Dunn Hill site will certainly be developed, but she's concerned about overdevelopment.
Garden Hill and the area around the stadium has been systematically overdeveloped due to city-made growth policies and land use decisions dating back to the 1970s. This area experiences increasing public safety issues, including inescapable noise, mad parking, vandalism, and violence as demographic diversity decreases. This is simply not sustainable.
Slough says local police don't want to or can't deal with what she termed the negative spillover effect of high-density student development. CA Ventures and RCR Properties are developing the six-acre property located at the northeast corner of 17th and Dunn Streets. They are petitioning the council to rezone the site from residential high-density multifamily to planned unit development. Zoning planner Eric Grulich said the site's current zoning of residential high density allows for 15 residential units per acre. The apartment complex currently on the site is over that limit. The new complex would also be over the limit with close to 50 units per acre, hence the need for a zoning change. The site plan describes 4- and 5-story buildings with a mix of apartments and townhomes. The complex would include a pool, a 540-space parking garage, and a greenway connecting 17th and 18th Streets as an alternate route for pedestrian and bicyclist use. The 746 bedrooms will be leased individually, and an additional fee will be charged for parking. A separate building offering 4,000 square feet of retail space is planned for the northwest corner of the site. Garden Hill resident Margaret Gresher and other residents echoed Slough's complaints and said the city isn't responsible for providing student housing. Slough said catering to IU's housing needs go contrary to the city's stated goal of protecting core neighborhoods.
We don't have to put them anywhere, and certainly not in densities compounding already existing density issues. The city of Bloomington has become a residentially segregated community. Don't continue this process by approving a PUD. Recognize there is no mandate, no law, no ordinance, only the assumption that we must put them somewhere. Indiana University has the capacity to house students as necessary, to put sophomores back on campus, and to build housing should the need arise. We simply don't make it necessary, and it's time to start now.
An IU student named Justin provided an alternate viewpoint and credited off-campus living with contributing to his personal development.
Living off-campus has been incredible for me in developing my adult life and in developing the skills I've needed to live outside of the university. And the idea is that allowing students to live off campus helps them become adults, which is the point of college after all. And you as city parents essentially is to help foster that. So I encourage you to certainly fund development projects like this one, but maybe not this one. I don't know. It does seem a little overdeveloped.
Seven council members passed rather than cast yes or no votes during a straw poll at the end of the meeting. Councilmember Dorothy Granger, one of the members who passed, said students aren't all bad, but she acknowledged the neighbors' concerns.
On the face of it, I really like the project. Just it's close to campus. There's parking in the stadium. It just, you know, it works. But the neighbors have valid points, and I'm hoping that maybe what we can do is, I understand my colleague, Mr. Volin, is working on trying to get a parking district, and maybe that would help facilitate some of that. I don't want to vote no because students are bad. Students are not bad. There are, on game day, they might be bad, but then visitors are bad. So it's just a challenge to the community, and it's what we have to live with. And also, I'm not seeing that IU accepts a lot of responsibility for trying to move their student population into the community. And I don't know that we have a lot of options here, right?
Councilmember Susan Sandberg also passed on the straw poll.
It's really kind of more on us as a city, I think, to ameliorate this impact that we know is coming. One of the commenters talked about the buses. We're going to need to definitely increase our buses, so transportation is going to be kind of needed to be pulled in here. We're going to need to deal with the noise ordinance to make sure it is fully implemented with respect to how close this particular very dense project bumps up against a core neighborhood. We're going to have to think in terms of behavior management. When students gather in large parties, they sometimes lose their judgment, and they sometimes cause problems for a core neighborhood. So hopefully we can come to a balance of how we can see this move forward and also really take a look at the serious impacts that the people who live next door to this very dense project will have to face.
During negotiations with the city, the developers agreed to make a $1 million contribution toward affordable housing. Sandberg noted the developer was not required to make the contribution.
There is no ordinance that requires any developer to contribute to the greater public good through the city's efforts to put more affordable housing online. And so their contribution to the fund that will be used at the city's discretion for housing incentives and housing projects, I think, is quite exciting. Along with the Moose Project, these are kind of groundbreaking in that the petitioner voluntarily agrees to these terms before the city has had an opportunity to really think through an ordinance that does clarify and codify what the city desires to do with affordable housing.
City Controller Jeff Underwood said the Affordable Housing Fund is still in the process of being set up, and projects will be evaluated for funding on a case-by-case basis. The council will take a final vote on the rezoning request in its October 19th meeting.
A Baptist congregation saw its efforts to build a new church stalled again last night. The Monroe County Board of Zoning Appeals failed to either approve or deny a petition that would allow the Journey Baptist Church to build a facility at 3240 South Rogers Street. Two of the board's five members were absent for the meeting, and the remaining three members were split about the proposal, causing a procedural deadlock. At the beginning of the meeting, Associate Pastor Kevin Pruitt told the board that his church is looking to build a long-term home. The church currently has a location south of Bloomington on Old State Road 37.
This is our future end goal. So right now the proposed building is the 4,000 square feet, and with the understanding that if we were to ever build on the property again, it would have to come back through the variance process.
Pruitt says the church does hope to build onto the church eventually if the plan is approved. This is the second meeting in a row that the board has considered the church's proposal, and the second time that board member absences have prevented them from approving or denying the project. Several neighbors have spoken against the new church. Some neighbors, like Dirk Bland, worry the facility could be used to serve people suffering from addictions or homelessness.
I know some churches, and this is great, they in the wintertime help homeless folks. You know, they take them in and give them a place to stay, and that's it's good. It, unless it's right next door to you, and then you're like, right. Oh gosh, you know, one of those things. So it brings out a lot of emotion that you wouldn't normally think of. You know, just saying, oh, a church's gonna be built. You know, it's, and then you start laying awake at night thinking about it, and then here we are. So.
Bland also says neighbors heard rumors the Journey Baptist Church might operate a halfway house on the property. Associate Pastor Pruitt says there's nothing to those rumors.
Just to address the idea of the rumor of a halfway house, this will be a place of worship. We have a Sunday morning service, and we have a Sunday evening service, and we have a Tuesday midweek Bible study, but those also meet in homes as well, so just one of them meets there at the church. So.
It would technically be feasible for any property owner to operate a halfway house in the neighborhood with or without approval from the Board of Zoning Appeals. The county zoning laws allow that type of facility in the area. Another neighbor, Jennifer Meyer, says she worries that developments like the proposed church could harm her neighborhood in the long run. The county is working on a project to connect Fullerton Pike and Gordon Pike, which could increase traffic to the south of the neighborhood.
I don't have anything against a church or the activities that go on in a church. My concern is about the bigger picture and the picture down the road. This area, Rogers Street, is not involved with the Fullerton-Gordon project, but it is definitely being impacted by the Fullerton-Gordon project. Many of the people in the area are concerned about that corridor becoming another West 3rd Street. And as you look at West 3rd Street, you see homes that have become businesses through rezoning, and that's no longer a neighborhood anymore. And there is a big fear in that area that the same thing is going to happen down there. So again, I don't have anything against a church. I'm concerned about these kind of variances just taking little bites out of our neighborhood and really changing the nature of the area.
Two of the three board members present voted in favor of approving a permit that would allow the Journey Baptist Church to build at 3240 South Rogers Street, but board member Scott Wells had concerns.
This is a tough one. I like churches, and I like the whole thing about the Spirit. I'm all for that, but I have concerns about the after hours, what might happen. Listen to the couple comments from the people who live there. And the second thing is changing the character of the neighborhood. I'm concerned about that, so I'm voting no.
With only two votes in favor, the proposal stalled. The church's proposal will automatically be added to the agenda at next month's meeting of the Board of Zoning Appeals, unless the church withdraws its petition.
The United Way of Monroe County has announced the start of its 2016-2017 fund drive, which they've named Empowering Your Community One Donation at a Time. Funds raised by the organization remain local and support local people and families' access to education, economic mobility, housing, food, health care, and help during a crisis. At a kickoff event last week, several community leaders addressed a variety of ways United Way serves the community and urged everyone to join together to further those goals. United Way Executive Director Barry Lessau said that success depends on community support. Quote, "You are the key to making sure we, together, can empower every person in our community, one donation at a time," unquote. More information can be found at monroeunitedway.org.
Mid-September brought a celebration of Latin American Independence Days nationally amid a month of heightened attention to Latino families in the U.S. The Indiana Institute for Working Families recently reported findings from an American Community Survey, which states that Indiana is now home to 439,000 Hispanic or Latino individuals, or 6.6% of the state's population. This number grows along with contributions Latino and Hispanic Americans make as volunteers, business owners, and workers. But the survey also spotlighted issues of lower wages, fewer job opportunities, lower job quality, and fewer benefits such as sick days, fair scheduling, and paid leave. In addition, more than one in four Indiana Hispanic or Latino Hoosiers live in poverty. Their population is often clustered in low-wage industries and have become victims of wage theft. The survey also reports that better access to higher education can help. Locating educational programs within local schools, expanding mass transit, and making financial aid more readily available. The Institute for Working Families argues that the state must ensure state policies equally reward all Hoosiers by extending opportunities that strengthen economic security so all Hoosiers can reach their potential.
According to the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette, the cost of maintaining Indiana's roads and bridges rose to $2 billion in 2015. Still, the Indiana Legislative Services Agency states that Indiana has the second lowest spending per capita on transportation projections of its neighboring states. The agency has called for finding more revenue for roads and bridges. Currently, the primary sources of revenue include state and federal fuel taxes, BMV fees, and local wheel taxes. Representative Ed Soliday from Valparaiso says Indiana must decide what the state's goals are and then find a way to raise revenue to meet that cost. Possibilities include raising the gas tax, which hasn't happened for a decade. Other options include bonding, public-private partnerships like tolling on existing roadways, using surplus dollars, or adding new fees for usage. Some states have even considered charging vehicles on miles driven, according to the Journal-Gazette.
A woman from the Ohio River town of Patriot, Indiana, was arrested last week for a fake online cancer scam, which netted her $3,000 in donations. 29-year-old Santana M. Banta is being held at the Switzerland County Jail for making false claims on the popular online fundraising site GoFundMe and other social media sites. Banta claimed she had terminal metastatic cervical cancer and that she needed money for medical treatment. Banta will reportedly be charged with felony theft and misdemeanor deception for the online scam. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Carolyn Vandeweel.
And I'm Ryan Stacy. Support for WFHB and the Daily Local News comes from Smithville Fiber, a local provider of internet, voice, and TV service, now also offering home automation and security systems for homes and offices throughout South Central Indiana. More information on Smithville's home automation service is available at smithvillesecurity.com.
People of color have a long and fascinating history in the state of Indiana. Admitted to the Union as free state 200 years ago, the state still was home to slaves, with slaveholders employing a variety of tricks to skirt the law and keep people in virtual bondage to them. Playwrights Dr. Gladys Devane and Liz Watford Mitchell, as well as director Danielle Bruce, will stage the original multimedia production Resilience, Indiana's Untold Story, a retelling through their vivid imaginations of dark-skinned people's stories here in the Hoosier State. The play will run next Friday, Saturday, and Sunday at the John Waldron Arts Center, October 14th through the 16th. The three join Michael Glab on this week's edition of Big Talk.
This is Michael Glab, Big Mike, with Big Talk. My guest today, Danielle Bruce.
I have worked with Gladys now for the last 6 years. I directed a show for her goddaughter, Brashawn Joyner, who is also a Bloomington local, and she came in to rehearsals and she said to Brashawn, do you think she'd have any extra time to work with me on something? I want to do an audition for something else. And Brashawn said, yeah, give her a call. She had this whole list of things that she was wanting to work on as an actor and as a writer. And I said, well, I would love to talk to you about what your ideas are. And from there, we started to work on projects, and we have had an amazing rapport, just an incredible relationship for the last 6 years.
Let me explain that she's a retired professor from the Indiana University Kelly School of Business. Also, she was in the Department of Speech and Hearing. She fancies herself and is a storyteller and actress.
But I'll
Look who's here.
Yeah. The storyteller, actress,
Gladys
and writer.
And Elizabeth Mitchell.
And Elizabeth
Come
Mitchell.
Come on in. What do you mean a storyteller? What does this mean?
A storyteller means that I take information that is based on something that actually happened, okay, and I create a storyline with that person telling the story of this actual event. For example, my director here did this one with me. A woman named Polly Strong, whose mother was a slave, brought into Vincennes, Indiana, by a Frenchman named Hyson LaSalle. She went on to sue for her freedom. Hyson said, because your mom is my slave, you are my property too. This lawyer from New York happened to be to settle in Vincennes. So he said, Indiana is not a slave state, and we need to sue for you. So I created this story based on how she would tell it.
And that's the springboard, kind of, right, from that point.
And so then we combine it with, you know, we have to take liberties. We don't know exactly what the narrative was. So we create a story based on this event. We develop the narrative. She does the staging. And she and her sister, the costuming, you know, that kind of thing.
And so this particular story will be in the Oh, it's not in the
She wouldn't let me put it in there.
I had to separate them. They was going to fight.
That's Liz Mitchell's voice. You know who were slaves? People with your skin. Not people with my skin color. People with my skin color, quote unquote, owned people.
Sure, absolutely.
How do you get over that? Or do you? Liz Mitchell.
The repercussions of that still exist today. Has to. And there were a few black slave owners. A few.
Do you think about it?
When I'm writing the stories, I like finding out the facts on things. How can you be a slave and then a year or so after slavery is over, you own property, you're doing well? How does that happen? That's what I'm interested in. Tough people to even make it over here on the boats.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
So I tell people, I'm a product of that. The weak people died. If you were weak-minded, if you were weak physically, you're out of here. So I'm the descendants of the strong people. I feel good about that.
What about you, Gladys Duvane? What do you think about that? Does it reside in your mind in any way?
Yes, it does, but not all of the time. And I think the amount of whether or not it resides depends a great deal on the experiences that you have had. And if the bulk of those experiences, and I put this in quote, are positive, quote, you tend not to belabor that. It also depends on the environment in which you grew up in and what was being said within that environment. My grandmother, I spent the first 10 years of my life in Texas on a farm with my grandparents. That was during a time when we could not go into, I tell the story of my grandparents wanting to buy us shoes, and we had to put our foot on a piece of paper and draw around the foot with an imprint, because you couldn't try shoes on in the store. You couldn't try clothes on in the store. That was life then. We couldn't go into restaurants. They had this little ice cream place where we had to go to the side window, and they would slide the window open and serve black kids of black families their ice cream. And I tell the story about how he handed me an ice cream cone and the ice cream screen fell off on the floor.
Oh.
I mean, on the ground.
Yeah.
He takes the nickel and closes the window.
That's that.
And I said to my grandmother, "Why is he so mean?" And she said, "Honey, some people are just like that. But you can't be ugly because he's ugly."
The biggest problem facing us today in the United States of America is the relations between people of different skin colors.
Mm-hmm.
Would you agree?
Oh, yeah.
How about you, Gladys?
Yes.
Yeah.
What about you, white person?
What about me, the only other white person zip code? I think it is a huge problem. In my life, I've never been faced with it as a problem.
I found a quote by Liz Watford Mitchell, who said, "If you were left out of your family photo album, wouldn't you be hurt?" And basically, that is the story of a lot of...
That's the truth.
...dark-skinned people from Indiana. And
America.
They are part of the... Well, obviously,
yeah,
America.
Yeah.
But,
America.
And much of the world.
Yes. Yeah.
But... So we're going to try to do something about that with this presentation. I wanted to call it a play.
Do call it a play.
Do call
All
it
right,
a
I'll
play.
Call it a play.
Mm-hmm. Or yes. a production. I think
yeah.
that works too.
Multimedia production.
So what's it going to accomplish? Who wants this, Liz or Gladys?
I'll start it off.
Go right ahead.
I'm going to quote Gladys, though, her phrase, edutainment. You're going to be, yes, edutainment. You're going to be educated and entertained. You're going to learn about history. We've taken the truth, kind of used a little bit of artistic liberties, and we're going to educate people. We want to thank Bloomington because the citizens of Bloomington has helped me put this on. Bloomington did it. Bloomington residents are in it.
Yeah.
And so, and all ages and all colors, because it took all of us to tell this story and make things happen. So we're going to tell you some stories. We had to, all three of us fight. We almost had a wrestling contest. We had 12 stories, maybe 13. We had to cut that down to 6. Can you imagine
man.
Three women making the decision?
Oh, God.
What 6
it's
stories?
Like cutting off fingers or something.
Yeah. It was fun, though. So we've got 6 really good stories.
Really?
That we're going to tell. And through the eyes of 2 elderly African-American women.
Danielle Bruce is the director. The writers, Gladys Devane, Dr. Gladys Devane. Liz Watford Mitchell, the historian. Thank you so much. I hope we get to know each other and become friends for a long, long time.
I think we
and
will.
And thank you so
thank
much.
Thank you so
for
much, and I hope
here.
To see you at the play.
Resilience, Indiana's Untold Story, will be at the John Waldron Arts Center from October 14th through the 16th. You can hear more episodes of Big Talk with Michael Glab at WFHB.org.
Support for WFHB comes from Monster Digital Marketing, offering digital marketing solutions for small businesses. Monster Digital Marketing websites are built for search engine optimization with both the desktop and the mobile device user in mind. Located at monsterdigitalmarketing.com or on the phone at 317-567-1197.
Support also comes from Growing Opportunities, a social business project of the South Central Community Action Program. Growing Opportunities is an urban hydroponic farm that helps job training opportunities for low-income people with barriers to employment, especially people with disabilities. They grow produce that is sold to local eateries, supermarkets, hospitals, and schools. Information available at 812-332-2168 or online at inscap.org.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News here on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Kathy Norton and Leah Carter, along with Sarah Vaughn and Joe Crawford for Cats Week, a partnership with Community Access Television Services. Our feature was produced by Michael Glab.
Our engineer today is Chris Martin. Our theme music is provided by The Impossible Shapes. Executive producer is Joe Crawford. For WFHB, this is Ryan Stacey.
And I'm Carolyn Vandeweel. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered independent daily news program.
Stay tuned for Blooming Out, Indiana's only LGBTQI public affairs program. Coming up next on WFHB.
The Daily Local News is produced by a staff of over 50 volunteers
working in the WFHB News and Public Affairs Department.
Comments, suggestions, and story ideas
may be submitted directly to our news staff via email.
The address is news@wfhb.org.